Hi, this is Michael Chenoff with MichaelChenoffHardToFindSeminars.com. Welcome to this presentation for the Hidden Internet Marketing Asset System. The title of this presentation is called, What Businesses Are the Biggest Cash Cows and Other Frequently Asked Questions for the HIMA System? In this two-part audio, you'll hear David answer specific questions from his students about everything from how to market the workshops to whether or not they should carry a laptop. And like always, you'll get all the intricate details. So if you have a question in mind, chances are it's covered in this two-hour discussion. This is part one. In part one, it's called, Take the Pressure Off Yourself and Your Prospects. Most likely, you're going to be nervous before your first workshop. It's completely normal and completely expected, but there are ways to alleviate the stress, and in part one, you'll hear all about them. David says it helps to just be yourself, have fun with it, and never even think about selling. This takes the pressure off of you and your prospects, and believe it or not, it's the non-threatening, non-salesy sales pitch that gets them every time. Questions covered in part one. What businesses work best for first-time consultants? All about the 15-minute free consultation. What to do, what to say, and what happens when the 15 minutes are up. How to stay to talk about stuff for 4 hours at a workshop. What day and time works best to run a workshop. What to outsource, where to find the help, and what you can expect to pay. All about setting up squeeze pages for clients. How to track affiliate PayPal payments. How to get on the radio as an expert. The advantages and disadvantages of paid upfront workshops versus free ones.
My name's Scott Million, and we decided that we would handle all the frequently asked questions before the webinar because there's so many here. How you doing, David?
I'm doing great. Hold the great.
Well, we'll get right to it. Tonight we are going to do a live call with David, and we're going to get into some pretty intense information. But first, just to save you guys time and give you the most value possible, we thought we would do the questions outside of the live event since a lot of these are very specific and everyone will not necessarily enjoy them. So here we go. The first one is from, it looks like, Bill Pruitt, and he says, David, would it be better to call or visit a business rather than sending a letter?
That's a good question. It's actually always better to visit if you can, because you're your own business card, more or less. And if you can show up in person without really being a salesperson and taking interest in them, that makes a big difference. You know, letters work. This time of year, letters are really tough to get to work direct mail list, just simply because you're so crushed with the holiday traffic that it goes in the open later pile instead of in the trash can, but that gets pretty full before it's all over with.
When you go to these businesses, if you go in person, do you do like a double visit where you go in, you warm up with them first and then return later, or do you try to do everything from warm up to walking out with a check the same day of?
That happens occasionally, but I kind of let them take the lead. And what they want to do, I let them do most of the talking. They'll probably do at least 70-80% of all of the talking while I'm in there, because I'm trying to get to know them. You know, because the more I get to know them and their personality and the way their business runs, it's much, much easier to figure out solutions.
Gotcha. Any recommendations on the opening line when you walk in and meet a business owner for the first time?
I basically just tell them I was in the area, and I was talking to other business owners about some new systems that have come out, you know, just to help them cut their advertising expense and increase their profit simultaneously. And, you know, you've got a business around here, so I just thought I'd stop in, you know, and talk to you. Then I'm not selling anything. That works.
Do you bring a laptop with you?
No.
How do you handle it if the business owner doesn't have the internet?
I just normally take a legal pad with me the first time I go in there, and that's about it for me. And the reason is if you come in with anything else or equipment, you know, of any kind, even sometimes a business card, they're like, it's a salesperson.
So the least amount of material as possible.
Absolutely. Sometimes I don't carry anything in. You know, I'll go in and just talk to them just like it is, and sometimes I'll take their business card at the end and write down a time that's convenient that I can stop back in at a different time.
Perfect. Moving on to the next question from Susan Whitehead. She says, I was wondering if during the workshops, did David go through these steps on his laptop live by going to aweber.com online or creating a website live at the conference, or do you use screenshots and just explain the images? And she's wondering, does she need an internet connection to conduct these live demos?
No, actually, we've got one of our support guys that's actually creating a screenshot. Well, he's editing it. I've already created it. A screenshot that folks will be able to view, you know, just go and download it. They can go through it as many times as they want. And it's about 6 or 7 minutes long, and it shows you exactly step-by-step how to do all that stuff in AdWeber, how to get the light box, how to put it on the site, how to do all that stuff. It's fairly straightforward.
Perfect. I'm sorry, is this something that you have that you can provide, or is this something that people have to create themselves?
That will be going out to the entire list, totally free. As soon as Rob gets finished editing it, I'm going to send it out, just kind of like an unannounced bonus.
Excellent. Jack Tackett, I believe, asks, what is better to use, a SaaS autoresponder provider like iContact or AWeber, or do you use your own software like MailLoop or AR Plus?
Actually, that's kind of a loaded question, because if you're comfortable with whatever service it is, then that's the one you want to use.
As far as deliverability, though, probably GetResponse or AWeber would be better.
Yeah, that's true. And both of those have high deliverable rates, plus they also have, you know, a lot of built-in tools, Spam Checker and Spam Assassin and stuff like that to kind of help you, you know, determine. That's really, really helped me as far as AWeber goes, and GetResponse got the same thing. But it's helped me identify words and things like that that I can get rid of or replace or something that dropped it sometimes from a 3.5 spam rating to 1.
Right, to make sure they get through. We're going to do the same thing. If you put cash and money online in there, they start to throw flags. Princess asks, I tried this method exactly to the letter last week in the restaurant niche, and she only received one phone call. Now, I don't know how many letters she sent out, but her question is, what niche would work best to start acquiring customers? I think more specifically, what types of businesses are best to target?
Man, that's a wide open field, because there's everything from bait and tackle shop owners all the way up to big retail establishments. But some really good ones to start out with that are almost always open are local beauty salons and nail salons sometimes and things like that, because they're not doing a whole lot with that. And you can do a lot with hair salons and, you know, even makeup places, any place that sells cosmetics, beauty supply places. They're normally open, they're normally smaller, and you can talk one-on-one with the owners right there, and they can see the light pretty much immediately.
Now, do you recommend restaurants?
Some restaurants, yeah. They can be really good for that.
Right, so mom-and-pop shop restaurants.
It will work for franchises, but it's a little more work because normally they've got such a steadfast set of rules that the owner has to go by. It can be really tough, but most of the time we'll put up a little lead capture site in front of their corporate site and then redirect and capture all their lists and that type of stuff before it ever gets to the informational side of the franchisee site, and that way it doesn't really interfere with the process.
Gotcha. Susan asked a couple more questions. She said, what day of the week and time have you found to be the best for workshops?
Saturday mornings usually work really well. I know it's a pain in the butt. And believe it or not, most of the time, Sunday mornings will work really well. And, you know, a lot of that just depends on their operating schedule. Friday
right.
sometimes works as long as you don't hold them past about 12 or 1 o'clock.
And how far in advance, you know, especially if you're doing advertising and you want to make sure you pack the house, so how long should you market your workshop before the actual date?
A lot of that, of course, depends on how many different methods you're using at the same time. If you can get a good group of outside salespeople, you're done. You can fill a workshop probably about 10 to 12 days fairly easily. Other than that, unless you're volunteering to go on local radio shows and even church radio shows and stuff like that, you can put the word out about that, and that gets out there fairly effectively, too.
So maybe a week or two?
You're right. I'll normally give it about 2 weeks, sometimes 3 weeks. If I'm just starting out, I want the first one to be really great. But I guess one thing I got to consider, too, is the first workshop I ever taught only had about 7 or 8 people in it total.
And this was something that people paid, or was it free?
This one was actually free, and I made probably between 13 and 15 grand off of that within the following 30 days, so...
And as far as the marketing for that, what did you do when you first started out on that to fill the room? Did you use salespeople then?
Actually, the people that I was working with was a nonprofit organization, so they actually put the word out to their membership, and they didn't have a very long time to do it. I mean, we only worked on it for about 6 or 7 days, but we got about one person per day, so that worked.
All you need is a couple, right? You got your month's income.
Yeah, that's it. You don't need that many. And I had one guy that called me right before a workshop started before in Tennessee, and he was all nervous because there was like 9 people there total. And I said, man, that's awesome. I said, wait and see what happens. You'll see.
The next question Susan asked was, you mentioned these are 5-figure workshops. What kind of fees do you charge these folks after the workshop? So I guess you have your initial, if you do charge to fill the workshop, you can make several thousand dollars or even in the tens of thousands depending on how many people you get in there. But also, more importantly, this is all set up for the back end for the services. And I know you have a price list, David, but I guess Susan's wondering, per client you get, what's your range of starting out? What's your range of how much you can expect for each sold client?
A lot of that honestly depends on the client themselves. And that's why I guess sells it more than anything is they sell themselves. They're actually asking me to take the money, so that's the difference. And it could be anywhere from, you know, a grand up front or even 500. You know, I've done businesses for 500. I'll do that all day long. That doesn't bother me. I know that eventually they're going to turn into $10,000 or $12,000 a year clients, and you just have to get them to that point. And then you've got other clients that'll give you $5,000 up front just to do everything, because I've had one of them do that simply because he was sick and tired of working with the people he was working with at the time.
Yeah. We'll ask on the live webinar, Susan, if you listen to this, we will go in more details on how David charges 1,000 plus, because I know a lot of people are like, how are you getting that much money when you're only doing 250 to 500 per autoresponder? So we'll ask that on live call and go in more detail. Now, she also asked, can you further explain how the 15-minute free consultation works?
Sure. It's basically what it says. It's a free consultation. The neat thing about the workshops is that you don't have to prove anything to them, period. When they call you, they already know who you are. They've watched you, and they're calling you because they're stuck. You know, or they're ready to just take it to the next level, one or the other. So when you go in there, it's a fairly laid-back conversation, and that's basically what it turns out to be. That's the place where I might take in my laptop and the legal pad to write notes or whatever.
Okay. And during that 15-minute consultation, is that a time that you're really spending just listening to their problems, or are you actually going in there and showing them how to email customers and whatnot?
I kind of let them take a direction to a degree. Is I'll talk to them about things we went over in the workshop and how that relates to them. And then I just shut up and let them talk. And the more they talk for every solution I can think of, I just write it on the legal pad, but I don't interrupt them normally. And then when it's all said and done, I just turn the legal pad around and go over that with them and pretty much let them decide where they'd like to start.
Gotcha. It looks like they said, can we get a better idea of David's script I used in his presentation? And this was before we added the OTO materials. So those transcripts and frequently asked questions have been sent out. And Susan, if you didn't get that, feel free to email me at support@scott.com. David, you're also going to be sending out some bonus audios for those who got the OTO as well. Is that correct?
Correct. I'm going to be doing that. Plus, I am going to be providing a separate set of transcripts that I have not announced yet. And those will be going out as well. So it would pay to stay on the list.
Perfect. Michael Mullen asks, what are the most lucrative types of businesses to work with? And I think we already touched on this a little bit, but what have you found to be the biggest cash? Or is it just really depends? I mean, is one mom-and-pop shop could be a completely different sale than another, or is it like doing restaurants tends to pay more?
Well, I'll give you a couple of examples of that. And it's both opposite ends of the spectrum, but it gives you an idea of what you'll run into if you've been out there long enough. Is on one end, I noticed just in a flyer, I got it delivered with a newspaper, a local chain of grocery stores, and I was looking at everything they had. They have some really good prices, and they go by the deal. You know, it's family-owned and operated. It's been in the same location for 60 years, and, you know, it's customer service type stuff, which is a great angle, and they have a very loyal following. But I also noticed that you got to bring a whole flyer with you if you want any of the discounts or coupons or whatever. There's no place for any lead captures, no place for anything. That turned out to be a huge client because they had several different locations, and even just starting out at a minimum of $250 a pop, you know, for an autoresponder, turned out to be pretty lucrative. And on the other side of that, I've been in a little mom-and-pop uniform shop that sold, like, hospital scrubs and stuff like that. And the guy that managed it was the owner's son, and the owner actually came to me later and said he owns a whole bunch of different businesses. After the uniform shop got rolling, then, you know, you get a call from the guy that really owns it and says he's got a dozen other businesses he'd like to talk to you about.
Perfect. We already addressed this, I think, as well as what type of industry are the most eager and easiest to accept working with you. It sounds like nail salons in any small business where the business owner is in control, it's something that they can make the decision the day of. You don't have to go through the ladder, right?
Absolutely. And I always try to teach people, you know, to have one or two big consulting contracts on the back burner and work the mom and pops, because that's where your money's at. That's your bread and butter. If you land one of the bigger ones, that's cool. You know, if you don't, it's no big deal anyway.
You're listening to an exclusive interview found on Michael Sinoff's HardToFindSeminars.com.
Let me ask you, have you found there's a particular business or industry that you should just absolutely avoid?
Wow. Yeah, there are actually some of them that I wouldn't say a particular type of business, but I would say there are particular types of people that you can avoid. Is a lot of them network between themselves, and they work only with their own nationality, and that makes it really tough for those of us here. And there's a lot of different ones like that. But the only way you really know is to go in, you know, and help them out. And then if you don't hear from them, then you pretty much already know that that's what they did. But to get all the information from you they could and have their brothers, mothers, uncle do it.
But it's pretty few and far in between where you hit those, right?
Yes, that's true.
Okay. Phyllis Breach asks, when outsourcing, how do you determine a good rate for different jobs, such as setting up autoresponders, copywriting, SEO, et cetera? Do you have some kind of guide that you use? I think Phyllis is looking for maybe some competitive rates for the types of services you'd offer as a e-commerce consultant.
Yeah, you can actually go to several of the different outsourcing sites, you know, like Elance.com or eGuru, and just put something out there. And I don't know if they're going to know if you ever accepted a bid on it or whatever, but that'll give you a general idea, you know, what you can get it done for.
Absolutely, because you can go on those sites and, you know, you get 10, 20 people putting on bids, and you can check out and see the quality feedback rating and kind of get a gauge for a medium price.
Mm-hmm. So that way you know pretty much if you add the top and bottom together and divide it, you've got a pretty much median number. If it's going to cost you $125, then you could easily charge $250 for it and not do any of it.
Exactly. Copywriting, I'll say to Phyllis, that's something that will really range.
Oh, absolutely.
There's people that will sell for low, and there's people that will sell it for thousands of dollars just for an email. So that's something that you definitely have to test on Elance or whatnot. But it's very easy. I mean, I use Elance all the time, and it works great. Just make sure you check back the quality rating, feedback score, see what other people have said about them before you go forward and do business. And I usually actually go a little bit on the higher end just to make sure I get that quality, because there is ways to get burned on that, but you can usually solve that before you award the bid just by checking out their profile and their feedback.
Absolutely.
And he gives you a compliment. Information was invaluable. Jan Roos. I'd like to know from David how he manages to speak about autoresponders and direct marketing sites for 4 hours at the seminar he speaks at. I'm actually curious about this, too, because I looked through your presentation, and I know you can really go on forever about these things, but I guess, how do you do it? Is there a lot of questions that fuel that time, or are you speaking the entire 4 hours?
I'm not speaking the entire 4 hours. I'm actually only doing about half of that. That's because if you really go through it, the first two or three slides go very quickly. They're like, you know, 5 to 7 minutes. They're done. You're through the first three slides, but it gets them involved immediately. So from the first or second slide on, they're all interacting, and then I'll actually start picking people and picking names, and so that works really well.
Will you, like, call out a business owner and just say, you know, give me the name of your business, you know, ask them what are your advertising costs, and just actually, like, use people in the crowd as examples to fuel the presentation?
Sometimes. It depends on, a lot of times I won't ask them about their business or about what they do. I will say sometimes I'll ask them if it's a service industry or a retail industry. And at that point, you know, they'll usually pretty much tell you their life history. And that's fine. But that's really the only thing you really need to know. Is it a service industry or a retail sales industry?
Gotcha. And when you do these four-hour seminars, I mean, is it more of just kind of like if the value's in it and you've explained it and you've gone through the process, I mean, it doesn't really matter if it's 2 or 6 hours. It's just as long as you got all the information in there that you needed to get.
Yeah, that's true. And then a lot of it, which I really like, is that it's only about 3 or 4 hours long, about 4 hours, sometimes 4.5 at the most. And a lot of that depends on them. But on the flip side of that, too, that's not giving up very much of their time away from their business, so it works really well. I have had all-day workshops before where we broke for lunch, 45 minutes for lunch, and came back, and about half the audience was there. You know, and the rest of them had taken the business card and booked because there was like, too much going on, you know, and they didn't want to be away from the business for the whole day. And most of that is they don't trust their employees.
Now, Jan also asks, I don't know if you have this available, but have you ever recorded one of your live seminars from beginning to finish?
Yes, I have. And I use that sometimes for one-on-one coaching or for that type of stuff. And we've actually looked at different ways of trying to do that by remote, and that didn't work out too well. So.
Okay. Might be something offered in the future, but you do provide some recorded coaching calls that people can access in the members area. Lakshay, I believe, says, here's a short list of questions. Should the pricing in countries like India be reduced to 1/4 to accommodate for the purchasing power parity?
I get that. I guess that depends on if you live in India. Because if you have the same standard of living that the business owners do, then the pricing is relative. It might be really tough to cut down to really, really low pricing if you're living here, you know, or in a different country that, you know, you can't live the same standard of living for what they can.
Right. Obviously, this is scalable and relative to the currency and where you live. So if it's 1/4 lower, then that's what you would charge business owners there.
The good thing about it, though, is it's your business totally. You know, you can charge whatever you're comfortable with to anybody because that's your business.
Right. Now, she asks, who writes the email and why would customers love to buy after that email? In other words, what would help boost the sale? So I guess this is a good question, too. When you sell them on writing emails for them, you know, is there a strategy if you're outsourcing emails for what things to include to make sure that your customers are getting return on their investment? When they send out emails, they actually see the difference and they're like, wow, this really works. People are coming in, printing off coupons. Is there any kind of system you follow for that?
Yeah, when I write the emails, and I cover this pretty extensively in the workshop, too, and it's the old rule where you just make it agonizingly step-by-step, agonizingly detailed to all of the folks in there, and that's in the outsourcing section of the workshop. And that's where I break it down to them pretty much to hire you, because they're worth $350 an hour. We break all of that down according to the government. And outsourcing, rule of thumb, is if you can do it yourself and you know what you're doing and less time than you can pay somebody else, then do it yourself. But when it comes to copywriting, you might as well forget that. It's got to go to a flow. I always tell everybody, online, offline, it doesn't really matter. If they're on your list and you can deliver some really good content to them to begin with without actually slapping them in the face with an offer right off the bat, let them get to know you and let them get to like you, and then maybe even give them some freebie stuff that really does help them out. And then when you do offer them something on the fifth or sixth email in the series or whatever, then they're ready to buy by then.
Right. In some cases, it's relative to the type of business. For instance, if the reason why people are opting in is because on the receipt it says opt in to get discounts every week, then obviously you can send them discounts every week, right?
Absolutely.
So it would depend on the type of business and their types of customers. If it's a retail store, they're selling things, discounts are probably a viable option. If it's a restaurant, you know, maybe send a 2-for-1 coupon or something on a Tuesday night when they have the least amount of business to pack the house. You know, it's just all relative to the business type, right?
It really is. And a lot of times in situations like that, I'll try to make it a dual offer, and I'll outsource the emails just about every time. And you can sell them in packages, which is the best thing to do. You know, even if you only charge them like 25, 50 bucks an email, you just have to explain to them that that's a one-time fee. If they get a 3 months worth of emails, you know, a quarterly package, then they've got those forever that every new customer is going to get for at least 3 months. So those keep delivering for years, and you've only paid for it once.
Right, and that's something I think I saw a lot of questions about. When you sell these monthly packages of emails, you want to make sure that you sell a bulk of quarterly or semi-annually or full year, so that way you're not dealing with them on a monthly or weekly basis on what this email topic should be. It's just all done.
Right, and what a lot of folks don't realize, actually, until you get in the field and you start dealing with a lot of these owners, is that, you know, they've all, for the most part, got public accountants and everything that they have to turn stuff into as well. And they normally will do advertising in quarterly budgets. So it makes it very simple to set up their email campaign for an entire quarter in 2 or 3 days, and you're finished. But, you know, all the sales go out on time, it starts working the customer list on time, and you're pretty much done.
Excellent. The last question was, it seems like we already addressed the types of businesses, but I guess the squeeze page question. So there's a lot of business owners out there who don't have websites. What about just creating a squeeze page for them? Is that something you do, that they don't have a website?
You can do that as well. Absolutely. And to be honest with you, most businesses, unless they're selling a whole lot of products, you know, right on the page, then a lot of business owners, actually, that's all they need. It's just a little one-page website that captures their leads and turns them into customers. We had actually a lady that we did that for that sold makeup, and she wanted to put more into it than there actually was, you know, than she needed. And we just put up a one-page site and let them come in, put their information in, and she held a free makeup class, and that worked phenomenally well.
Excellent. For those wondering, you know, well, how much does it cost to outsource a squeeze page? I outsource squeeze pages. There's a Warrior Forum member named Blue Squares. It's his Warrior ID.
Yep.
Do you use him too?
I know of him, and I've got really good feedback from that. And I was going to say that, too, as far as outsourcing goes, the Warrior Forum is a great place to go other than Elance, because those guys normally know what they're doing. And they're going to do a good job, because you'll get slammed on there if you don't. So.
Yeah, there's actually a link on the Warrior Forum homepage that says Warriors for Hire, for those listening. And if you go in there, there's all kinds of service providing, from copywriting to HTML, creating web pages, squeeze pages. And like I said, I use Blue Squares. He charges between $100 to $200. But, I mean, this is for absolutely outstanding work. I'm sure he's going to love me for mentioning his name, but I'm raving about it because he did such a great job for me in the past and very responsive.
But see, that's the great thing, though, is that's the same thing that happens to you when you do the same thing to business owners. The business owners turn around and do the same thing. They tell their friends at the chambers or whatever, they'll say, man, this guy rocks.
Oh, yes. Word of mouth. There you go. So when you over-deliver, people speak about your services. But the point is, you know, if you're looking for a price point on this, you know, just realize if you're doing the squeeze page, you should be charging a lot more than just putting on an autoresponder. In fact, David, can you give some price ranges of what you would do for a squeeze page?
I'll normally range anywhere from $1,500 to a full marketing package of $5,000. But the difference is it's not just a squeeze page. It includes a marketing system, you know, along with it. And that's the difference.
It's a sales funnel. They're getting the squeeze page, the autoresponder, and their customers are being marketed to on autopilot.
Correct. So it's a totally hands-free system for them. And it just depends on where they want to start at.
Excellent. William says, in lesson 2, you mentioned there's a flyer in the marketing section that's made specifically for a salesperson you choose to market to the seminars. Where can I find this flyer?
Yeah, that should be in there. And if not, I'll have to go through that again to make sure, but it should be. I'll go through and ask Rod and Chris and get with those guys and get them to put it out there.
I'll look through it, too. It might have been in the web design packet, but I'll make sure you guys all get that. I'll put it in the members area, and you'll all
get it. That helps, though.
Yeah. And then you mentioned you charge $150, $250 a month in maintenance fees. What determines if a client pays $150 or $250 per month? Is the amount of monthly autoresponder messages you send per month for a client, or is it if you have to create the messages versus the client creating the messages? Mm-hmm. Wondering what's the difference between charging $150 or $250 for autoresponder
messages? Yeah, that's a good question. Basically, I got to boil down to it's how many offers that they're sending. How many sales are having? Normally, most businesses will have 2 to 3 sales a month. They're probably better off with the $150 deal if they're doing 2 sales a month, because it's going to equate to be about the same thing as what I charge them to broadcast it anyway. $250 a month is if they're doing over 2 sales events per month, because they're actually going to save money by doing it that way. Because on a $250 package, I'll send out up to 4 broadcast emails per month at no charge. It's included in that price. And that includes writing it. So I'll write the offer and send it out.
Okay. If they only have a discount once a month, then they probably go to lower end. But if they're doing a promotion every single week and they really want to run with it, then you can go to the $250 and do more emails for them with that.
Right.
Okay. In lesson six, you talk about outsourcing to college students. Can you give some examples of how to pay them? For example, percentage of a project that you pay them.
Yeah. Normally, you can pay total outsourcing. I try to pay about 70-75% total. So you can pretty much pick anything you want and use that formula. And a lot of people thought I was crazy because you're giving up a lot of profit. But to me, if I'm not doing it and I'm making money on it, I'll take that.
Right, and then you get to keep all the monthly things after that.
Correct. They have absolutely no clue about anything. They're paid per project, and it thrills them, and they usually do an over-the-top job because they're just trying to impress you with their knowledge and what they can do, and they love the money. I mean, you can pay a college kid $250 or $500, and they're your friend for life.
I wish I had stuff like that. When I went to school, it was like 7-15 hours the best you can get, so opportunities like that are definitely in demand. It asks if you have college students that write your autoresponder for each client, and how many autoresponder messages do you have them write, enough for a year, 2 years. We already went over that. It depends on what package you sell them on, but at the minimum, quarterly.
Yeah, it's much, much easier that way. And I had some clients that say, can you go less? And I said, well, you can, but it won't be for me. And then they look at me really funny, and I'll say, well, to be honest with you, you can't just write like one email at a time and send it because you're constantly going to be behind, and you're going to lose a large portion of that list. So, you know, you've got to go at least quarter. You've got to be committed to this, or it's just not going to work, period. This is a long-term marketing survival deal. It's not a one-shot thing.
And do you use college students to do your outreach for emails?
I do sometimes. I have a couple of them that do really, really well, and they're not from the graphics or computer science department or anything like the others are. These folks are actually writers and authors and that type of thing. And a lot of them are in the marketing department, so they're studying this kind of stuff and studying advertising and campaigns, and they can learn something from me that they can't learn from the college, and I can get something from them in return. And by the time they graduate, hopefully they can be writing for some pretty big companies.
Excellent. John Burnett asks, I'd like to know what David found to be the biggest mindset that business owners have to overcome to be able to get down to business. I know in the end it becomes how you can benefit their bottom line, but is there some sort of mental hurdle, maybe lack of understanding they have, that should be addressed up front during the initial contact?
There's a lot of that. It's a total ignorance of how the internet works for their business. Their mindset is there is online business and there is offline business, and that's pretty much it. And that's probably the hardest thing, is to get them to see the light about what their business could be doing. And the easiest way to do that is ask them how they're tracking their advertising. What's their return on investment? And if they have an answer for that, you could be in pretty rough shape. But 99% of everybody you ask that has no clue.
Perfect. Princess asks, how do you work out which salesperson has brought in which sales if they're sending them to your website? So how do you track that they're the one that sent you that PayPal payment?
I just basically use, you know, the affiliate script, and it's the same one we're using for this. And that's an invaluable tool. You know, if you're going to market online, you've got to have something either like that or very similar to it, and that one's worked wonders for me. But it's a neat way where only the salespeople know where that page is at, and they can go there and sign up, and they get credited for everything they do.
Right. Something else you can do, Princess, is you can actually set up, you know, if you have a domain, yoursite.com, you can do /, and then have, like, whatever the salesperson's name is, .html, and actually have that be another web page. And when you set up the payment for the item, just make sure the item number, just put a number in there and match that to your salesperson. That's a way to get around it for free if you'd like to start this without investing in anything.
Yeah, and that's a great tip, too, because that helps and can get them off on the right foot. It's very easy to track. If the person signed up on that site, it doesn't matter if 15 salespeople talk to them first. Look, folks, that's the guy that got them. You know, so he's the one getting paid.
Right. Also, you can just ask the salespeople to give you the name of the person they signed up, and believe me, they'll let you know.
Oh, absolutely they will.
Zora says, can we also apply this email marketing strategy for business-to-business sites? How would the content of the autoresponder newsletters and the frequency be different than business-to-consumer businesses? That's a great question.
Yeah, it actually can be applied, and yes, it would be different. And it's all based on, of course, their service industry or exactly what it is they're offering. I like to try to get a newsletter out at least once a week for that type of a business, like on Tuesdays is a good day for that. That can actually be turned around into different offers, you know, that they could eventually put in the newsletter themselves, along with trending news or something similar to that. And by the way,
I'm not sure if this is something you do, David, but I know a lot of businesses do this. They create white papers. You essentially create a job for yourself by giving your clients, like if you were a marketing firm and you sent your client a report that showed them 10 ways to advertise their business for free. A lot of people are scared, like, why would I do that? You know, then they're just going to do it on their own. But since they don't have time for it, so they read that report, they're like, this is awesome information. And then they pick up the phone, they call you and say, how much for you to do this?
Absolutely. And that works really, really well. And that also goes back to the other point where I go across all of that stuff, where you can get a business owner to look around in their own place of business, or you can think of things, and write a little report for it, and offer it to their list, and split the profit with them.
Right, setting up a joint venture. So you had a list of electronics store, and they didn't have an email going out one week, and create a report on, you know, how to get cheap electronics or whatever, and then you talk to the business owner and say, hey, I wrote this report, I think your list would enjoy it, your customers, and if they go for it, you split it 50-50, right?
Yeah, either that, or probably more of what I would do if it was a place that sold stereo equipment, car equipment, stuff like that, car stereos, let's say. If they don't have an install department, you know, marry them with one, and let those people go through that and split the profit that way.
You mean do a joint venture with a stereo install company?
Absolutely.
Okay. Zora asks, how can we upsell this service effectively to include business blogs?
To include business blogs. That's actually fairly simple to do. And it goes back to whether they can do it themselves or they want you to do it for them. And you can charge them pretty much whatever you want. I've even got some students that add that on there as a freebie. And then if they want to add content, they'll either sign them up for a service and let that automatically add content to their blog that's relative and charge them for that. It's a fairly easy upsell. And it does help them rank. And after they get to know you, you can show them that. I have a lot of students that do that for free because, I mean, how hard is it to set up a blog? And if you can redirect a little bit of traffic there, that opens their eyes to a lot of possibilities.
Yeah, and Zora, if you're looking for a cheap way to do that, the site just came out called Articles, article with a Z at the end, articles.com. It's a service by Dave Kelly, and they charge $6 for a 350 well-researched post, and it's really easy to do. It's great. I've used it. It's phenomenal, and it's cheap. So if it's something that you want to outsource, you can go there and get very high-quality material for a very low price, and you can charge business owners a lot more than $6 for that.
Absolutely, and I agree with you. I've used them before, too. They work really, really well.
Excellent. So check out articles.com. That's with a Z. Frank says, please, David, what guarantee do you give the client with your service? So do you give some sort of guarantee on response, or do clients ever say, well, we'll only pay you if the money starts rolling in from these emails? Have you experienced that?
Yeah, I've had a couple of them say that. And for the most part, if you let them do most of the talking, especially after a workshop, if you're meeting them after a workshop, that very rarely ever comes up because they already know that you know what you're doing. And that's the only time that you really ever have a problem with that.
For more exclusive interviews on business, marketing, advertising, and copywriting, go to Michael Senoff's hardtofindseminars.com.
Ben asks, I keep hearing you reference different packages for customers, i.e. $500 versus a $5,000 package. Just wondering if there's examples of what price points you offer and what you include. Ben, we'll answer this on the live call, and we'll go into more detail on those services. David also has a pricing list we'll be sending out as a bonus later this week. Also wondering if it'd be possible to flesh out some of the content for the seminars. I know that's pretty broad, but if you could give perhaps 3 to 5 bullets under each heading that you personally use, it'd be very helpful.
Yeah, we'll actually be sending out, like I said, a lot more content and information on the workshop slides themselves. And then we've got those bonus transcripts in addition that will be going out. What we're doing is just trying to find the longest or one of the most profitable workshops and then just transcribe all that and send it out as well.
Yeah, Ben, I'm not sure if you saw the OTO offer. I know a lot of people missed it. And if you did, it's warriorwebinar.com/OTO1.html. And I'll leave that up for a few days after this and send out an email if you want to grab that. But that has David Preston's personal slide presentation that he uses. And it's totally customizable. You know, not all this is just cookie cutter. You're more than welcome to add things in there and take it out to tailor it more to your audience or your voice.
Yeah, and it can be a lot of fun. It's almost, I guess, like Dan Kennedy said one time, that I can spend 2.5 hours teaching somebody how to properly construct a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Right. It's important that you take everything and you have your own personality. You can still do the same selling method of getting them to ask for the sale just by pretty much overloading them with information. They just don't have the time to do it themselves. But you know, you're not going to be the same attitude as David Preston. I'm not going to be there. No one can be. So you have to throw in your own personality and develop some of these things on your own.
Yeah, and the neat thing, though, to try to remember, and this is really tough on your first one, but this is probably the best advice that I can give anybody, is you're going to be nervous. You know, everybody is. I was nervous, especially since I had no money coming in at the time, and I knew that this one was being done for free. That's not a good feeling. And it was the first time I'd ever done that, and I was really, really nervous. It disappeared after about the first 3 or 4 minutes. I don't know where it went, but I'm glad that it left. But after you start, things just have a way of developing on their own. And the biggest advice I could give you is to be yourself and have some fun while you're up there. I've actually been in a presentation where we were talking about advertising budgets, and I made a really dramatic point that was probably save a lot of them in there, thousands of dollars. And when I stopped, there was dead silence, and this guy sneezed in the back of the room, and I said, hey, that's nothing to sneeze at. You know, and that was it. The whole room just lost it. And things were on a totally different note from that point forward. But you can get them to relax, and I guess there's an old salesman's saying that they say, if you can get them to laugh, you pretty much own them. They're comfortable enough to watch you and have some humor with you, and that's how they get to like you. And if they like you, they're going to buy.
Right. And one of the things that I like a lot about your method of selling, David, is, and this is for people who are going to do these workshops, is that there's really no pressure. Like, you're only in there to deliver instructional, valuable information. You really shouldn't be thinking about, oh, how can I get these people to buy from me and get my business card? It just happens naturally. If you just give them this content, the clients just come to you naturally. They ask you for the sale. So if you can just think of it that way, it'll take a lot of pressure off, I think, on doing these workshops, because you're not trying to get a sale at the end of it. You just want to give your business card and free consultation. Just be completely non-threatening. Would you agree, David?
Oh, absolutely. That is absolutely the key. Is I'm there to teach them. That's the bottom line. If they ask me something, I will answer it. If I don't know what it is, that's a major opening for me. You know, and sometimes I'll say, look, if you want to take one of my cards back there and write down your contact information, that's going to take a little bit to go through, and we're really kind of pushed for time, but I'll be more than happy to give you a ring and go through that with you.
There you go. So there's no hard selling at all involved with this. That's what I love about it, because I sold windows and siding, and believe me, that was hard sell. That's tough stuff. This is a walk in the candy store.
It's so great because you can see light bulbs going off around the room. You start talking about tracking your marketing and that type of stuff. They're probably sitting there at that moment saying, I'm losing half of my advertising money right now. This guy's really good. That's cool.
Yeah. it's just a natural progression, and, you know, it's just something that you really don't need to be worked up about because you're not selling anything on these workshops. It just happens naturally. I love it. VM Uderbeck says, could you please share some samples of your non-disclosure and non-compete agreements and other agreements for salespeople and workshop speakers? I don't know if you have these that you could provide, or maybe a site or something where they can get this information to print out in case they get to a point where they're dealing with, like you mentioned to me, you go to businesses sometimes, have them fill out a non-disclosure before you give them advice so that they don't go behind your back.
Well, what I had to do on that was we went to our corporate attorney and had him draw them up. It cost me about $400. There are sites, I'm sure, online that you can get pretty basic non-disclosure agreements, non-compete agreements, and you could just do a web search for them. And I would try for free first, you know, just to see if you could find them. But now our attorney told us specifically that we could do that. However, it would still have to be modified to cover that particular municipality, which makes sense to me. So you can use generic stuff, but, you know, you might want to tailor it or find an attorney to brush it up a little bit for you to make it for your state, you know, or your region or whatever. They know the local laws about that stuff, and there are stipulations. So I would go bilateral on those agreements, too. I would never go with unilateral because bilateral, they understand, you know, and that's basically I won't share any of your trade secrets and you don't share any of mine.
Okay, so you really need to get a lawyer involved when you get to that level.
Right, because if I sent them something from here, you know, that specific sentence, and that might not be the same as it is for their sake.
Right. I don't want people to be worried about having to pay this money up front because this is something that you're probably not going to hit until you're pretty well into it because you're going to be starting with mom-and-pop shops and you're going to have plenty of income to use those agreements because this is something that you do when you start moving up to bigger companies. Is that correct?
Correct. And I always tell a lot of the coaching students that stuff like that's really not necessary at all. You know, like you said, working with the little mom-and-pop stores and that type of thing. But if you move up to, like, that grocery store chain I mentioned earlier, those guys are on the verge of being corporate, and you always want to document everything when you start moving to that level because, believe me, those guys will stab you in the back. The little mom-and-pop shops, I've never, ever had one of those try to ethically outrun me or something, so to speak. But I've never had them go behind my back and do stuff. They don't have time for that, and they really don't want to fool with it anyway. But they may do some price checking and then get back to me, but that's pretty much about it.
Okay.
Other than that, with the corporates or the chains or that type thing, it's a CYA issue for real.
These are guys that if you don't sign that sort of thing, they're going to go to their bosses if it's their idea because they're going to get a raise for it. You
know, absolutely.
They don't owe you a dime.
No.
But that, like David's mentioning, that's something that you will not encounter until you start going to these greater levels. Like, you would not encounter the situation until you're already pretty well established and, you know,
correct,
making a sizable income.
Yeah.
So at that point, it would be a no-brainer decision. It would just be like $400. That's nothing compared to what you're already making.
Yeah, they normally already got them on file, and I just had them put some extra stuff in there for hours, and that was why it was so expensive for us.
Perfect. Steve asks, what are the common objections you've heard, and how did you overcome them? You get objections when you go into local business owners of why they wouldn't use your service. Do you ever have to get salesy and start using some closes on them?
Not really. I always tell everybody, I sell by education, and I'll show these guys exactly what they need to do. If they want me to sit there and show them how to build this, and see, it's all in your verbiage. If I'm looking at you and say, sure, you know, if you've got a really sharp employee, I know you don't have time for this. And I said, but if you've got a really sharp employee, I could spend a couple of hours with them and show them how to build their own autoresponder and how to set up the database and the list manager. And I've actually had one of them look at me and say, a sharp employee? Are you kidding me? And that's their mentality. It's unfortunate, but it's true.
Have you ever had someone take you up on that offer?
I've had somebody start to do that a couple of times, actually. And you get into the first 5 or 10 minutes of it, and they're like, uh-uh. That changes it because the employees keep coming to them or somebody keeps coming to them. They're like, you know, never mind. How much to do this?
Perfect. I hope that helps, Steve. You know, objections are a common thing that comes up when you're in sales, but the whole way that David approaches this is you're not asking them for the sale. You're not saying, you need this. You're going through and you're educating them about how this can benefit their business and just kind of going through and finding solutions that tailor to their needs. And they're asking you because they're like, wow, this is great. You know, I really appreciate your time. How much to do it? There's no objections because you're never actually selling them.
Yeah, about the only objection you ever did, and it was one of the biggest marketers that I've ever known in history said that that was what he thought was so brilliant about the system, was one of the only objections you ever get is how much.
Sometimes, though, price does become an issue, and then you leave on good terms.
Yeah, and that's it. They can either get somebody to do it for them, or I can do it. You know, it's their choice.
Right. You just make sure you leave on a good note, because there's always a chance they'll call you up and say, yeah, I want you to do it. Will they call you sometimes afterwards and change their mind?
A lot of times. And a lot of that was simply because there was no pressure.
And you're leaving with an attitude of, you know, that's fine, I'm busy, I'll go help someone who wants my help, not upset because you didn't make the sale.
Right. And a lot of times they'll come back to me, and I'll offer my help to them even after that. I'll say, look, if you find somebody and, you know, you're not really certain or you have some pricing issues, you can get in touch with me, and I'll help you, you know, if I can, because I'm right here in your backyard, so. And that's key. If you're there to help them, it doesn't matter if it's the first time or the fourth time you've been in there, they're eventually going to get to the point. If they've got a business partner, the business partner might even say, well, why do you keep asking this guy? Why don't you just get him?
Right. Perfect. George asks, I prefer not to promote workshops at this point due to some issues. I'd rather work exclusively over the phone with business owners. Do you have any suggestions for a model or marketing process for this? Is this something that you can do just as easily or fairly easily over the phone?
You can do that, but you can't use the same type of system because it's just not nearly as powerful. Unless, now I have done this. I have had like a teleseminar where business owners have been on there, and I ask their questions. I've done that with local call-in talk shows, too, where they could call in and ask questions.
Does that work well?
It does work pretty well, especially on the radio, because when they do call you, then it's, again, the credibility issue. You know, they already know who you are, and they don't know that you're not the biggest pro in the entire world. If you were on a radio station, then you're the king in their mind.
Exactly. It sounds like, George, you know, you could polish in, I think it's in the first or second guide, David talks about getting on radio shows, even if it's not a main station, even like some like a local church. I'm not sure in your experience, but I think a local church is a great way to go because they see you as whatever religion you are, just go to your local church or monastery or whatever, and they see you as someone they can trust because you share that faith. I think that would be a pretty big response that they know that they can trust you instantly just by being on those types of shows.
Oh, absolutely. My first radio gig was a large denomination church, and that worked out extremely well. And they were thrilled that a business consultant would sit down and go over certain things with the congregation that did have a lot of business owners in it.
Right. It just seems to me, I mean, I haven't done this, but it makes sense to me. You already have, I don't want to say a relationship, but you already share something in common, right? If you go on a church radio show, you already share that you're both Christian or you're both Muslim or you're both, you know, whatever it is. So there's already a trust there.
Sure, there's an instant common ground.
There you go. Instant common ground.
And we got a lot of really good questions while we were on. The first time I was on, I was actually asked back several times. You know, over the course of the next year, I was on there probably four or five different times. And that, of course, led to other things.
Right. You had some invitations to other radio shows after that, didn't you?
Right. The first invitation I got was from that one of his congregation actually owned a radio broadcasting service. Service, he owned his own radio station.
Perfect. Just get out there and do it. You know, it happens.
It happens real quick, too.
I know you described this workshop, but I mean, it's fairly easy to get on these local radio stations. They're actually, a lot of them are in need for qualified people to speak. Have you noticed that in your experience?
Oh, absolutely. Believe me, they need you more than you need them. It's a mutual thing. They'd love to have somebody that could be on there and provide really good content for their listeners. And that grew to the point from that little church deal. It grew all the way to the point where I've been on an AM all-business call-in talk show, and we just got slammed for 30 minutes while we were on there, the lights, and it was just crazy. They were like, well, just about every light on the panel is lit up right now.
A lot of power there.
And you could do a lot of those by phone now.
So you don't even have to go to the radio station.
Correct.
Excellent. George asks, this is kind of a similar question, what have you found to be the low-hanging fruit when it comes to prospects converting to clients, and what is their profile, business size, type, ownership, et cetera? We kind of already addressed that, but do you have anything else to add to that, David?
Not really. I would say employee size is, I'd probably stick to a dozen or under in the beginning.
Okay. Keep it small. And then what profile fits the next best group of potential clients? So it looks like you want the next step.
Investors will eventually start to show up. I know that sounds really weird, but that's what happened with me. It's happened with a lot of the students. It's happened where you're helping one business, and you find out later that that guy really doesn't own that business, and he has to introduce you to an investor that owns his business. And that's fairly common. And that investor owns a bunch of businesses.
Perfect. And lastly, it looks like I was wondering what the advantages of setting up an autoresponder account for your client versus having you manage them.
Like, if they want to set it up, I'll absolutely show them how to do that. Very rarely have I ever done that. That's one of those where you'll start it, and about 10 minutes later, they're like, all right, man.
But you don't tell them the price of the autoresponder, right?
Sometimes I do. It depends. If they want to go in there and do it totally on their own, then, yeah, I'll tell them. Because eventually they're going to come back to me for email ad copy or for campaigns or for newsletters. I can write them and send those to them. But the main deal you have to remember is I'm there to help them. And if that's what they want to do, then I'll help them do that.
Excellent. George also asks, what advantages and disadvantages have you found in the paid model versus approaching business owners one-on-one over the paid seminar model or doing a 30-minute free workshop through local business organizations such as Kiwanis Chamber of Commerce, et cetera? What have you found to be the best?
The best money-wise, I would have to say, is the paid upfront workshops.
Okay.
Because those folks actually have paid, even if it's a nominal amount, to be there for that day. You know, so they're fairly serious about wanting to do what they need to do to start capitalizing on the Internet.
Right. Would you say there's any disadvantages to going with the paid model?
There are some disadvantages because, of course, it runs into the marketing deal. It becomes a sale up front instead of on the back end. And for me, it's just much better to have a professional salesperson do that for me, you know, than for me to worry about that. And that's probably the disadvantage, is that you've got to weed through a wheat field to get rid of the chaff. Hiring, you know, for about the first couple of 3 weeks, and then you kind of run through who's going to produce and who's not, and you're okay after that.
Right. Now, for people starting out, can they go the paid model, or would you recommend starting off as free, waiting for a little buzz before you started charging for it?
You can actually do it either way. You can actually set up the first free one. If you do a first one like I did, I set up the free one just so I could use it for publicity for the paid one.
It is something you can do, but it's a little bit easier to get the word out first by doing some free ones. That'll more easily pack the house in the beginning, and then you can start doing paid seminars and have some testimonials or, you know, at least business cards of other people that enjoyed your seminar that they can call if they need to build your credibility. So it's like, you know, I'm actually paying for something and other people have enjoyed them before.
Right. I didn't tell them the first one was free. You know, I just said, hey, you know, I've already taught at this place and blah, blah, blah. Here's the feedback I got from that.
Yeah. Chris asks, when the clients want to leave the monthly fee program to manage the autoresponder themselves and find that they have to import the list to their own AWeber account, how do you handle the objections as many who are halfway intelligent that are more likely to be upset because they will lose subscribers? Any thoughts or buzzards to smooth this area over for a client when this happens? So I guess if they go with you for the $150 per month at some point, they say, look, we don't want you to manage our list anymore. You export it in Excel. You send it to them. Chris is wondering, have you ever encountered this issue before?
Oh, yeah. Not very often at all. And the reason is simply because they don't want to fool with that stuff. And once they see that it starts generating, and all they've got to do is pick up the phone or shoot an email over to you, and it's done, that's what they're looking for. And they care less about any of that other stuff. They just want the results and hands-free, and they don't want to fool with it. But in the interim, I have had customers that said whatever so-and-so, their college age son is home from college now, they want to start, that was actually the last example, was they want to start employing him, you know, so I guess he's going to have to do something for the money. So we'd like for him to take over that. I was like, okay. And I explained that to him, you know, that what you're going to have to do is set up your own autoresponder. I'll spend some time with him, show you how to do that, and you're going to have to transfer the list. And there's good sides and bad sides to that, but this is how it works.
That's the end of part one. Please continue to part two.